After a disaster strikes, if you feel like it's you against your homeowner's insurance company, you probably also realize if you have to go to battle with them, it is not a fair fight. They have deep pockets and high-priced lawyers. You and I have no ability to put together the same team. So what options do we have if we feel the insurance company isn't honoring the deal we thought we were paying for? Well, there is an option out there for you to consider that you might not have heard of. My guest today is Ron Snoffer. He's the owner of National Claims Negotiators, a public adjusting firm that property owners can hire to get what they should be paid after a disaster damages your home. I'm George Siegel, and this is Homeowners Be Aware, the podcast that teaches you everything you need to know about being a homeowner. Ron, thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome. I'm looking forward to doing this.
Now, the insurance industry is a very challenging industry. Anybody that's ever filed a claim, anybody that's ever been involved with it knows. I live in Florida. Just getting insurance is a challenge. So you're laughing. So tell me what you do and how you play a role in the whole insurance thing.
So I am a licensed public adjuster. I am an advocate for property owners, the consumer. I started out actually working for the carrier. I was a cat adjuster, and I worked in hurricane claims and disasters and so on and so forth. And I switched sides when insurance companies, I realized, were not paying claims properly, and switched to the other side, which there's not very many of us actually in the country. So it's a good
position. And your timing is interesting for that you had reached out to me, because I'm making a documentary film called Built to Last, Buyer Beware. And what we're exposing in the film is one of the biggest things is when insurance companies don't pay people, or they do what you're saying. They say, nah, that's not $50,000 worth of damage. It's $10,000 worth of damage. And from the other side, that's upending people's lives. I mean, That's everything.
I know several people that are in your film.
I would imagine you would. Yeah. I mean, we had a great bunch of people on both sides. There is another side to this. And we interviewed people you probably know on the other side as well. I just happen to think that I'm concerned for the homeowner, for the victim. That's what I advocate for. Whatever gives us the protection that we deserve. So why is this such a big issue? Why does it have to be such a big deal?
So it comes down to the fact that insurance companies are a for-profit industry. And so I used to work for Allstate, and there's a book out there called From Good Hands to Boxing Gloves. That's kind of when it all started, and it started in your state of Florida. So what happened was Allstate decided they weren't going to pay a claim, and an attorney had to sue them and was asking for documentation and so on and so forth. Well, the documentation that he was looking for was how this all started, which was the McKinsey files. Allstate asked the McKinsey group to come in and tell them how to make more money. And they said, well, why do you pay so much in claims? And Allstate said, well, to take care of our customers. And so we don't get in trouble with the state, and we get to keep selling insurance and so on and so forth, and we don't get sued. They said, well, what's that going to cost you? And the next thing you know, it costs them less money to get sued than it does to pay claims. So they switched their entire mantra on being a consumer advocate to being okay being sued on a regular basis.
Now, most people don't know that when they enter into the agreement and they get their insurance. You know, you buy that insurance policy and you go, hey, this is my protection here. If my house happens to get blown away or burned down or something bad happens, I'm covered. What can we be doing on that side? So I don't need you. Is there a way to is there a way to understand that relationship better going in, so it doesn't end the way it quite often does?
So they've made policies so complex and so ridiculous that the average person can't read the documentation and understand what they do or don't have coverage for. And even if they think they have coverage for, like, I talked to a customer this morning that I can't help out. They sent us over their documentation, and they have all these exclusions in their policy so that they really don't have any coverage for the damage that they had. They thought they had a $25,000 deductible, and in reality, they had a 5% deductible.
Wow.
And they had non-recoverable depreciation, or it was an ACV policy because the roof's over 12 years old. And so they have no coverage. By the time you add those two together, their roof is self-insured. And they had no idea. Their insurance company, their agent told them they had the premier package policy, so on and so forth. They're paying $177,000 a year for this policy, and it's worthless. Worthless.
So, isn't there some grounds to go after the company that sold them the policy if it's under false pretenses, or is it, well, you didn't read the fine print? It's really on us as the homeowners to truly understand it. So, we need to find an agent that we have confidence in that truly points out. They don't just say, this is what your policy covers. Show me where this is. Show me what the exclusions are. Because I know in Florida, they're taking away sinkhole coverage. You know, you have that wind versus water battle. The roof issue is huge. What kind of roof was on a house? I mean, there's just so many things. It just seems like we don't have a chance.
That's just it. Is, like I said earlier, they are a for-profit industry. And the more of a shell game they can play with policyholders, the better off they're going to be. And having the right agent is very important, because I'm not going to say all agents, but a lot of agents are salespeople. They never read the policy, they have no idea what's in them, so on and so forth. I had a really good friend that was an agent. I'm not gonna, he was with one of the big three. I'm not gonna name them, but he would come to me and tell me how awesome their policy was. And then I'd have to show him in the policy, well, what about this? What about that? What about this? And he would be like, that's not what they sold us. That's not what they told us they're selling us. And he would highlight the benefits of the policy, because that's all they sold him, not any of the negatives. And what we're seeing now is these policies are coming in with less and less coverage on a regular basis. And consumers
Wow.
have no idea. They're not
No,
protected.
we don't. And that's so disappointing. So the role of a private adjuster, when you come in, do you have to be you have to be requested by the homeowner, but doesn't the insurance company have the option of believing you or not believing you, or is that then just the next step to give them a leg up in litigation?
So we're hired directly by the property owner, yes. And we're going to document everything that's supposed to be covered based on the policy coverage that they do have. But like with anything, if the insurance company decides to clamp down and not pay for anything or not do the right thing, they have that opportunity. But when you have a good public adjuster that knows what they're doing, the chances of that having to go to litigation are a lot slimmer, because they'd rather deal with us than an attorney, because the good ones know how to document a file so that it will be seen in trial. And that's the important thing, is we set every case up, no matter if we think it's going to be in front of a jury or not, so that it would, if it had to be presented in front of a jury. And they'd rather deal with us than an attorney.
Now it's almost impossible to get true statistics out of like the financial office of insurance here in Florida. I've written them numerous times for our film and I never hear back from them. When you guys get involved, are there any kind of statistics of success versus beating your head against a wall, or is that just is it hard to track that?
I think it's hard to track that, but I think NAPIA, the National Association for Public Insurance Adjusters, and FAPIA have some stats on that. I don't want to quote something that I don't know,
Sure.
but I mean, in our history, we've on claims that we've been involved in, we've settled almost $200 million in settlements. So obviously, we've gotten a lot more money than what the insurance companies initially offered.
And when you come out and go over a house that has damage, and you saw that maybe the insurance company said, yeah, you have $10,000 worth of damage. And then you start going over everything, and then it's 10, then it's 20, then it's 30, then you need a new roof, then you need to jack up the foundation. I mean, just so things just keep piling up. Do you lay it out in a way that the insurance company sees, okay, we missed this. We didn't see that. How do they justify being so off?
That's a great question. So I'm going to reference you back to 2008, when I was still a public, or still an IA and working for the carrier CAT claims. We used to get paid 25 cents for every picture we took. So we we were incentivized to take pictures of all the damage out there on the property that we could, not just to take random pictures of anything, but actual pictures of damage. Now they put a cap on it, right when I left, that you can only take 10 pictures. Well, my file on a regular residential roof is going to be 150, 200 pictures of all the damage that we find out there. And so that we can show the story of what really happened in that claim. And then we're going to document it using an estimate and a proprietary software. I'm sure you've heard of Xactimate before. We use the software Xactimate to write up our estimate. And then we're going to use codes depending on what city it's in and bring those codes in and manufacturer builder's instructions and build a file so that it should be very easy for the insurance company to look at and go, yeah, we missed this. Either send a senior adjuster back out there or just pay the claim.
Now, if I go to my insurance company and they're difficult, should I be contacting a private adjuster before I contact an attorney?
Yes. So most of the time, if you hire an attorney, they're going to hire a public adjuster. They have to have somebody who's going to go out there and do all the details and the cost estimating for the damage associated with the claim and review all the policy and so on and so forth. So we're also the first step because generally we're going to get a claim settled in a couple months, 2 or 3 months, where, unfortunately, the legal system, you send out a 60-day demand and then they reject that. And then you're looking at waiting however long it's going to be, depending on the court dockets for when you get in front of the court and depositions and so on and so forth. So typically you could be looking at a year, year and a half, 2 years on a court case where we might have been able to settle it in 60 days.
Now, how much do you guys take? What percentage do you get of the claim?
So that varies state to state. Here in Texas, we charge 10% is the maximum that we can charge. In Florida, they can charge 10%, I believe, during a storm event. And then 1 year after a storm event, I think it's 20%. I'm licensed there in Florida, but we don't actively participate in Florida. Too many insurance carriers are going bankrupt, and the property owners can't be made whole. So
Yeah, we see
it's
that far too often. And then the thing they did recently with this rule out of the legislature where you can no longer get attorney's fees if you have to sue your insurance company. So even if I go to you, let's say I have a $50,000 claim, will I have enough money left to fix my house if I have to pay anybody? So the insurance company is already putting me, even if I go to you, and I 10% is less than what an attorney probably would take. They could be as much as what, a third of what you collect. Am I going
I've
to have
seen as
enough
high
money to
as
fix my house?
50%.
What, yeah.
But here's the thing. Right now you have zero, or 20%. Is 90% better than zero or 20%? I understand there's a fee associated with it, but you can do all the same things that we can do as a property owner. But most property owners don't understand those rules. They don't know how to document the damage and put it into a package so that if it does have to be seen by a jury, they're going to win. I mean,
Yeah, and
there is some expertise to what we do.
oh, there's no question. And if I want to be proactive on my end, isn't it a good idea for me to at least have a very accurate record before the damage of what I actually had, so you have a better chance of coming in and then stepping into the situation? If I have pictures of the paintings and the TVs and the washers and dryers and all that stuff, does that help have if I have my stuff ready before you come in?
So it makes my job so much easier. There's stuff where you can be proactive, and the majority of the people that are proactive and have that documentation in place are those claims are settled much faster, much easier than the people who are reactive and don't have a clue where anything is. They don't know where their receipts are now all burned up. They don't know where the documentation is on the materials that they use to build the house, or what their furniture costs for the flood or the fire, or whatever the case may be. It's you have to be proactive in order to help yourself in a claim.
To what level, and how can you gather some of that stuff? Like if I was to walk around my house, I don't know. I might know what my computer costs. Well, just taking pictures. But if I have a picture of my TV, is that enough for the insurance company, or do I have to have an actual receipt? The same for the washer and dryer, the sofa. I mean, how deep of a record do I need to have?
So you don't necessarily have to have receipts for all that stuff, but if you have pictures of everything, that's a lot harder to dispute. You know, I was talking to a gentleman the other day that he got hit by a tornado, and the insurance company was asking for pictures or receipts for all his tools that got spread across the county, because the shop that was next door to his house did get leveled and threw tools miles and miles away from his house. It's like, I've been a carpenter for 20 something years. I've bought that stuff over my lifetime. I don't have pictures of all, or receipts for all of it, but he had a ton of pictures. So that's easier to overcome then.
And the best time to do that is on a sunny day when there's no stress and you're not running around going, what do I do? What do I do? Everybody could take an hour or two and just go around and photograph the heck out of their house.
And put that in the cloud. So it's never lost. It's easy.
Yeah, you would think you would think that would be. Now, when you look at the kind of things that go on in Florida, Texas is kind of like the Wild West, though. I mean, builders get away with all kinds of stuff in Texas, and they make it very clear you can't sue them. You can only go to arbitration. So you're kind of up against it. You get a crappy builder, and then you have to go to your insurance. I mean, how does that make your job more difficult, or does it just give you more business because there's more damage every time there's a storm?
So we're in the hail capital of the country right here in DFW. So every 7 to 10 years, I would say somebody's going to get a new roof and probably going to get siding and new windows. But I mean, the quality of workmanship, I wouldn't say makes it worse as far as the amount of claims or anything like that. Because I mean, last week we had 3-inch size hail sweep across the Metroplex, and we had 3 of those storms last year. I mean, when tennis ball size hail hits anything, it's going to damage it.
Yeah, I used to live in San Antonio, Texas, and they're a little more weather immune than
they
Dallas.
They got hit last week too.
Sure, but Dallas is right on that boundary where you can get snow, you can get hail, you can get more likely to have tornadoes. I mean, it's pretty scary. There's a lot of stuff to keep you busy.
That's why I live here.
But it is a beautiful area. So
it
is the trade-off.
Yeah. There's a lot of stuff to do here in Texas. I mean, everybody apparently wants to come here. I just saw this morning that we're up to 8.1 million people in the Metroplex. I want to say when I moved here 25 years ago, we had less than 3 million. So,
and that's just today from coming across the southern border. no, just kidding. But, you know, so I think when you look at when Built to Last Buyer Beware comes out, I think what people are going to see is, and I don't want to just throw builders completely under the bus because there are builders that do a great job.
Oh, yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff that's built that is not built to last. And you wonder what the thought process is. And then when you add that together with insurance that doesn't pay. So now I have a crummy house that was poorly built that I overpaid for, and I don't have insurance. It's like, it just almost makes it not worth owning property.
So I've actually had my real estate license since 2001. So almost 25 years. And I can tell you, like what you're saying, there has been a lot of builders come and go over the years that are doing the bare minimum requirements here in Texas in order to get by with building something. But it also goes back to affordability too. You know, if you're going to put in the house that's going to last a lifetime, it's going to be a lot more expensive than the average consumer can afford.
Well, then I say slap a disclaimer on it and say that this is a disposable house, that this is seriously, this is temporary housing. Don't tell me that, hey, it's built to code, so it's going to last. I now know if you build to code in Tampa, Florida, it's not going to withstand a Category 4 or 5 hurricane. The same thing goes where they're rebuilding Mexico Beach. They're not rebuilding to withstand the disaster that wiped them out. And I just think that's insane.
Now we got Had a couple clients that were on Sanibel Island. We didn't go out there to them. We referred them to somebody else there in Florida. But I mean, it was pretty devastating. One of them had just retired to Florida and life savings into their house, and it was gone within 6 months of them moving there.
Yeah, Sanibel Island was probably one of the most beautiful places you would ever see. And it just does not look the same now. I mean, it's just there's a layer of this brine stuff on everything. The mosquitoes were everywhere. And I know they're going to eventually come back, but it's going to take a long time.
Oh,
So,
yeah.
somebody that wedges themselves in there in a retirement situation, they have nothing to fall back on.
Oh, they already sold their house and moved. So they were devastated. So they moved up into Georgia. They couldn't handle the weather in Florida.
Well, I got news for them. They get bad storms in Georgia too. And what we're seeing is you go, okay, I don't want to own a home. I'm just going to be a renter. Most of Florida is now building wood apartment complexes.
What?
And they're wood. If you go to right like a mile from my house, there's a bar right on the water called the Salt Shack. Right next to them, four huge buildings, all wood, directly on the bay, where the storm surge would be most likely to come in from. So it's not elevated. There's a parking garage, and then it's four stories of wood. And then throughout Pasco County, throughout Fort Myers, in fact, people are, I did a post on Reddit, and people were saying almost every city they've been in Florida has wood apartment complexes. Your reaction pretty much said what you think about that.
I just thought Florida's building code was so much further ahead than what Texas was. I mean, Miami-Dade has some of the most hardest building codes in the country. I figured most of Florida would be in the same region as that.
You would think they would adopt it, seeing how effective it's been in South Florida, but they don't. And Mexico Beach, the house we featured in my last film, The Last House Standing, that was built with a concrete block, and it had the poured in place walls, and the whole house was concrete, and it withstood a Category 5 hurricane. The houses that are going up next to it are wood houses that are now elevated. They're not following the concrete forms pattern because they want to save money. So all those houses, we had experts say that that place is a time bomb.
Oh yeah. I mean, Florida's good for a hurricane every few years, and they're getting stronger and stronger every year, it seems like. I mean, I don't know what's gonna happen with these wood frame buildings.
I don't either. And we interviewed one gentleman who was a floodplain manager, and he was at a city council meeting in Mexico Beach, and he was talking about how there were residents that were wiped out by Michael, but were arguing for them not to raise the standard to rebuild, that they wanted to have a lower code. So a year or two after they strengthened the building code, they dropped it back down again and lowered the elevation required for building. I hope nothing bad happens there, but it sure has a weird feeling to it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Like I said, it's crazy. I thought most of Florida was under the building code for Miami-Dade.
no, and I guarantee you, most people moving into an apartment complex don't know that. There's nothing stamped on the side of the wall of the building going, "You're taking a risk living here, and make sure you don't stay in the event of a storm." And probably one of the good things that's exciting to see, we interviewed the CEO of the Tampa Housing Authority, which is helps lower income housing folks. And they build only concrete structures. So when they build an apartment complex, it's all out of block. And
That's good.
their philosophy is, why are we going to take people that are struggling and put them in a house that's going to get wiped out? Let's put them in something that's going to survive. And I'm wondering why people with means aren't thinking the same way.
Well, I have no idea on that answer. I mean, you brought up a really good question that I have no idea.
Yeah, it's a head
No.
scratcher. I'm sure it keeps you guys in business, but I'm sure you'd rather not have business like that. It's got to be pretty difficult when you're called in and you have to go out there. Describe what that's like emotionally when you're seeing people's stuff all over the place.
I mean, it's quite devastating. I one of the last claims that I handled was Hurricane Ike, and the The property owner in question had a 100-foot-tall pine tree fall and split his house in half. He had a 2-story house. His daughters were upstairs. Him and his wife were downstairs, and it wiped out the staircase to get from his daughters down to him. And I mean, two young kids under, I want to say like 12 years old at the time. And they had no means of getting down to their parents, and the house was cut in half.
Now, I've heard bad stories about those pine trees that they don't fall like the oaks do with maybe a little majesty to them. They come down like tomahawks when they drop. I mean, that could be deadly. That's serious stuff.
They were lucky to be alive. If that the bedrooms weren't on the outside of the house, if one of them was in the middle, somebody would have died.
Yeah, that's horrible to hear stuff like that. And when at the time when you get out there, are people looking at you as a lifeline? It's like, wow, I really need you to come through on this. Versus maybe the first guy that comes out from the insurance company that disappointed them, they really need you to come through with an accurate look at what they're entitled to.
Yeah, so I can kind of tell you from both ends of that. Same hurricane. I remember one of the last claims I was on, I was the 7th adjuster that had gone out to help the customer out. The first 6 had just gone and taken a picture of the front of the house and said no damage whatsoever. Same situation. The house on the front of the house looked fine. There was no issues with it whatsoever, but I went and knocked on the door. And I was like, yeah, I'm here to take a look at your house. You're in dispute. You're have several $100,000 in damage, and it's been below deductible 6 times in a row. What seems to be the problem? They open the door up, and there is no back of the house. A pine tree had fallen and taken out the back of the house. So the front of the house from the street looked fine, but there was no back of the house. And they still had the pine tree sitting in the back through all the bedrooms, all the bathrooms. A living room, their upstairs was gone in the back of the house, but you couldn't tell from the front street view that there was damage to it. And I mean, I was embarrassed.
Yeah, I mean that's unbelievable. You know, it's like I had a guy come out to give me an estimate on a roof repair, and he didn't even go up on the roof and barked out a number. How could 6 people have not done more than that? Are they under instructions to just half-ass it and come away with as little as possible to the victims, or are they just lazy? Are we getting bad people in those jobs?
So, I can't speak to that as far as how they're hiring people, but I can say that when I was in the business, the average age was about 53, and now I think it's about 28. So all the senior people that were in the business 20 years ago, or not even 20 years ago, 15 years ago, are now out of the business. They're retired, and they're finding people who have less experience at this point in time.
Now, I've seen videos where there are stories where people say the switching of adjusters, they have an adjuster that tells them everything's set. They think they're getting close to the point where they're going to get some action from the insurance company, and then they switch adjusters. Is that a deliberate delay tactic by the insurance company to say, hey, we're just going to outlast these guys. If we can drag this out 6 months, a year, 2 years, they're going to have to go away, and we'll save a lot more money than if we have to pay the claim.
You know, we've seen those tactics. We can't verify 100% that that's accurate. They reassign people on a regular basis, and they'll have claims that are just still open, and they'll get assigned to somebody else. I have one right now that's exactly that situation. We're on our 4th adjuster. We had a snow load collapse a partial building in Minnesota, and we're on the 4th adjuster. We got involved in February this year. It's been going on since December of 22, I believe. So a year and 3 months before we got involved. And he's on his 4th adjuster. Once we got involved, they switched it to another adjuster.
Wow. And I learned from an attorney that I had on a podcast, David Murray, that when you're talking to somebody at the insurance company, and you think they're taking really good notes about everything you're saying, if you end up going to court, they don't have to share those notes with your side. They don't even have to say they have them. That's for their record. So anybody involved in any kind of claim, the homeowner needs to have as good a records as possible, because you can't rely on your insurance company doing that.
That's exactly right. That's why it's so important to, when you think there's any issue with your insurance claim whatsoever, you need to get help. And public adjusters are there to help and be on the consumer side. I mean, there's things that they do on a regular basis that they will claim is work product way before you ever have to get into a lawsuit with them or jury verdict, like an underwriter's report. We had a claim in 2019. It ended up being the largest jury verdict in the state of Texas in 21. And in 2000, I think it was 19, the underwriter report, they had bought the building in November. The underwriter report said the roof was in excellent condition. They had three different inspectors go out and take a look at the building. The third one said, "This is the Cadillac of all roofs. It's in excellent condition." And then in trial, they wanted to say that it was all wear and tear, old, crappy condition, because they bought the building in November, and in March they got hit with softball size hail, destroyed the roof. So they went from getting 4 months of premium to having to pay $2 million for a roof. They didn't want to pay it.
Doesn't surprise me that that kind of stuff goes on. I would think that it's like the bully on the schoolyard. It's like they'll get away with whatever they can. How do we fight back? How do we make this a level playing field so when the disaster does happen, we're not victimized twice?
I think by you educating the public, that's one of the biggest problems that we have on our side of the industry as public adjusters and first party attorneys. We all have the same issue. It's getting the word out. I think you also interviewed Doug Quinn with APA. I mean, before his nonprofit was around, there was nobody advocating outside of the public adjusters and first party claim people for consumers. And we still aren't widely known. I mean, most people don't know that they have an option. If the insurance company denies or underpays, then they just think they gotta take it and suck it up and pull the money out of their 401k and do the repairs themselves.
I had no idea, and I was making a film. Doug pointed me towards people. We ended up interviewing Dick Tutwiler, who this guy was just amazing in the film. The things that he pointed out, and I'm one of those people that I think should have known better. I constantly get slapped in the face by the amount of things I don't know. That's why I don't try to claim to be an expert. I'm just passionate about wanting to help people. But people need to know about this stuff. You need to know that, hey, there's somebody I can call that can come out here and kind of level the playing field a little bit. So at least I have an idea what I'm working with and not just taking some adjuster that's phoning it in.
I agree 100%. But like I said, education is a key part of the reason I wanted to start doing some of these podcasts is education is a big issue for us. And the only thing we can do is try and get out the word to as many people as we can.
So what's the best way that people can get in touch with you, and how should they have you in their Rolodex so if an accident happens, they know I'm calling Ron.
Well, the easiest way to get in touch with me is probably through our website, www.nationalclaimsnegotiators.com. We have a free claim review on there. We get claims from all over the country and advise people for free on the front end. If they want to hire us, then there's, of course, a fee for that, depending on what the state is. And I mean, we want to be an advocate first and try and serve people and make sure they understand what they're dealing with when it comes to their policy and what their claim really should be at.
Yeah, I mean, I thought you made an excellent point early in the interview, and you said, "Well, you're getting nothing. 10% isn't really that bad if you get paid." The problem is when these people don't understand. I think the homeowner doesn't. We don't present to them enough what the cost of doing nothing is, and then when you start interviewing people that 5, 6, 7 years, you hear about Doug Quinn not getting back in his house for 7 years. He said the cost of doing something up front to avoid that is so much less than the cost of having to do it after the fact, that you can't even compare them.
Yeah, I think I read a statistic somewhere. If you defer the maintenance until it collapses or completely breaks down. And when I say the maintenance, if you have damage from a hurricane, a tornado, hail damage, fire, whatever, if you defer that maintenance until it fails completely, you spend 10 times as much for the same damage, and you
And
don't
that's
have
not even
coverage for it.
calculating what your time and your inconvenience and the things you can't do because you're now living in this hell that's been created by something beyond your control. I mean, that seems to be really bad. I mean, the kind of things Doug went through, if you know his story, is just horrible.
Yeah, I'm familiar with his story, and but that's a regular occurrence here in Texas. What we see a lot of here in Texas, because we have so much hail, is property owners will get hit by hail, and the insurance company will come out and pay for 184 shingles or $3,000 worth of damage below deductible. And then 4 years later, they get hit again, $3,000 or $4,000 worth of damage. And then 3 or 4 years later, they get hit a third time, and now it's $10,000 worth of damage, but you never made the repairs because you didn't understand just because it was below your deductible, you were responsible to make those repairs. And so now they deduct $8,000, $10,000 off your $10,000 repair that you should be getting in full now.
Yeah, and I think people don't understand. They don't calculate that there's a science behind what that deductible is. So if you have a 2% deductible, they know that most claims probably do not go over that, so they're going to have to pay money. But that doesn't mean the damage isn't there, like you say. So you can't just push that stuff off.
Well, the other part of it is we're seeing like policies that are completely awful at this point in time. We had a previous client who bought her house in, I think, 2017. Right after she bought it, she had a hail claim, and she bought it for $600,000. So she had a 1% deductible. She got the roof fixed. And then just last year, last summer in 2023, so the roof was less than 10 years old, but it was now an ACV policy, and she had a 1.5% deductible. And even though her house that she bought in 2016 was 600,000, now it was over $1 million because inflation in here in Texas, housing prices went through the roof. And so she had a $15,000 deductible along with an ACV policy on a $40,000 roof. And so she got 20 grand in ACV money minus 15 grand for her deductible, and she had $5,000 to replace a $40,000 roof. Had no
And what
idea.
happens is a lot of times they don't end up replacing it, do they?
She hasn't. She's not going to. She's going to wait, hopefully get new insurance is what she thinks. The problem is that claim is there. The insurance company has a database called Clue, which they manage all the documentation for every claim that's filed on a property. All the insurance companies share that database. So even when she switches, it's still there.
Yeah, that follows you around on your permanent record. That's not a
It
good
does.
thing. All right. So if you had to leave us with one kernel of wisdom that's going to save homeowners' angst and headaches, what would you tell us?
I would tell you that plans fail for lack of advisors, but with many advisors they succeed. That's Proverbs 27:17. And it's important to ask questions when it comes to your insurance claim. There is no bad question. Most people haven't been through this before, and if they have, the rules have changed, the game has changed. They need to ask somebody.
Yeah, I agree. I'll ask questions till you look at me and say, "Look, our time is up." And don't just ask the questions, write the answers down, because a lot of times you're talking to an expert at something and you're listening to them and you're trying to take it all in, and then 10 minutes later you're on to something else. Even if they'll let you record it, just so you have that information, because that's gold.
Most adjusters are never going to let you record them or film them or anything like that, because
Really?
they know the statute on that. That they know that a recording is going to be used in court against them at some point in time. They never want that to happen.
So then take good notes.
Take good
All
notes.
right. Well, listen, Ron, all your contact information will be in the show notes. I know we went back and forth and had some challenges trying to get together today, but I really appreciate your time. Thank you for sharing the information.
Thank you, and I'm really looking forward to watching your video. I didn't even know that was you. That's really cool that that's you.
That is me, and I'm excited about the film. And I hope it opens a lot of eyes, and
I'm
I
sure it
hope it helps a
will.
lot of people.
When is release date on that?
You know, we say this summer,
Okay.
but you got to have all the pieces fall together. Everything has to work out, but we're making great progress. You know, the trailer is up now, and we're trying to get a celebrity to be the voice of the film, and I'm excited about it. I think it's going to be a great film.
I'm looking forward to it. Yeah.
All
Look,
right.
I'll be watching for it coming out. Yeah.
Excellent. Thanks, Ron.
Thank you, man.
If you have a homeowner story, good or bad, I really want to hear from you. Be a guest on this podcast and share your story so other people don't end up making the same mistakes. It's an uphill battle being a homeowner, so let's join together and help each other out. It might be our best and only chance of having a good outcome. Thanks for taking the time to listen today. I'll see you next time.